Welcome to the Naughty Child Podcast with me, Richard.
And me, Polly.
I'm the dad.
And I'm the daughter.
Getting called out in the middle of the night to go carve a cow, to do a cesarean.
It's the closest thing to farming you can do in the middle of Bristol.
And then mum put on YouTube and then now it's there for the world to see, so it's great.
England were very chirpy.
And I think I only cried like 4 times, but they just happened to get all 4 times on camera, okay?
Locked myself in a procedure room.
Whether it shows something about me or whether it just shows I'm a little bit stupid.
I love people and I love cricket.
Suddenly I'm out on a helicopter because I can go on a glacier.
It's been the longest year ever, hasn't it?
My dog is now called Jimmy Anderson.
So I learned the anthem because I really genuinely thought they would make us sing it.
So Polly, I hear you're moving.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention it until next week till I'm actually out. But yes, I'm escaping the... I don't know how to describe my... Do you know what? Next week, it's going to be a spill the tea episode where I will tell all... maybe not all, actually. I don't want to get arrested. No, I haven't done anything wrong. But yeah, I am escaping this flat. Going to a nice all-girls accommodation where it should be a lot calmer. People should behave like humans. I should be treated like another human being. I hopefully won't have to be the magic cleaning fairy. Because she was very busy this week. Spent 3 hours cleaning up broken glass and cleaning ovens. I am very excited. Very excited.
It's fair to say, isn't it, that your experience of halls of residence has not been completely positive so far. So you've been offered a place in a different hall, and hopefully there'll be less antisocial behaviour and more sleep can be had there.
Indeed. And I think I'll speak about it next week and definitely at the end of the year, because I think before I went to uni, I only ever heard really good stories, and everyone tells you, oh, uni is going to be amazing, like it's such a good time. But actually, on the whole, I've had a really bad experience. Like, of course, there have been pockets of good and there are some amazing things that have happened. But for example, I'm obviously part of the cricket team and I don't feel okay going on a social with them because of stuff that's happened in my first few weeks, first months at uni. And that's really sad because I had an expectation of how uni would look and it's been nothing like that because of what a couple of people have done. And yeah, that... it's quite upsetting because also, well, unless you go do a master's, you only do uni once. You're never a fresher again, really. So it's a shame. But hopefully with this change, like my final few months can be really positive. And when I look back, it won't be all negative because at the moment, although, as I say, there have been some good parts, the majority are just, it makes me stressed thinking about because of... how bad it's been and how challenging that's made everything else, even just functioning, because when you don't sleep, you can't do anything else. Hopefully it just makes every other aspect of my life a little bit easier, because it's horrible when, even if you're doing something really fun, like, so for example, when I've been to football games or whatever, I know that I have to return to the flat, and that's really daunting, and that's really... it does ruin it, because then your mind is constantly on, what am I going to return to? Am I going to be able to sleep tonight? Will I actually be able to eat? Because will I be able to go in the kitchen? That's like, it's horrible, but that's kind of been the reality of it. So, I'm feeling very, very optimistic today. And hopefully it means the quality of the podcast goes back up.
Well, it all sounds like very character building stuff, Polly. And
do not. If I hear that one more time, I will. I'll be like, do you want to come live here? Do you want to see what it's like?
I've done my student years, and we lived in proper hovels back in those days, you know. But I hear you've got a commentary gig coming up. Is this true?
Okay, I was going to talk about everything we've spoken about so far next week. I can say it. No one's telling me I can't. But in a couple of weeks' time, Lancashire are obviously going to Dubai and Bangalore, and the games will be streamed, I believe, on Lancs TV. I don't know about all of them, but I think some of them. So I will be commentating from Emirates Old Trafford. And it happens to be at 4:30 in the morning. So stay tuned, because I think also I didn't think I was going to do commentary this early in the season, because obviously there's no cricket going on, unless it's overseas. So I might be a bit rusty, but I'm really looking forward to it. And I think it does prepare me well for the world of work, because particularly with a sport like cricket, it will happen in really random places in the world. And a lot of the time they want coverage from the UK. So you will get awkward hours. So I guess it's good experience. And I am really looking forward to it. But yeah, I mean, it is confirmed, so I can say what I want, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Well done. Well then, yeah, well, I look forward to listening to that. I'll be up at 4:30.
I was going to say, I was like, you could probably listen to most of it, but to be fair, we say the stream starts at 4:30. So that means I need to be there for 3:30. So I need to leave here about 3. So I need to get up about 2. So...
How are you a student? I mean, you'll be out on a night out, won't you? And you can just rock up to Old Trafford.
Because you've listened to everything I've said for the last 5 minutes, obviously. No, I'll be in bed by 8 with a cup of tea.
Oh, you're the most boring student in the world.
Yeah, I am. And I've got people to blame for that. But anyway, yes, I will be hopefully awake. And I did say, I don't drink coffee, but I was like, I think I'm actually going to have a coffee, because I've got a long day that day. So, and then a long day the next day. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, it'll be good. It'll be really good. Anyway, on some more cricket chat, it's been a good week for players that were retained by their 100 teams. So all the 100 squads released their retentions. And I don't think there are any massive surprises. I would say the only one that slightly shocked me was Amy Jones, because she has not been retained by the Birmingham Phoenix. Likewise, Eve Jones, actually. The Joneses, bit of a surprise, because obviously Amy Jones is an England player. And yeah, the England players haven't moved around teams very much at all. I know Kate Cross did the whole originals to superchargers and all that sort of thing. But I was surprised, but she's a wicketkeeper. She can kind of go anywhere. And I imagine she could go in one of the top bands because of that.
Do you think maybe Welsh Fire are trying to put a team together full of people called Jones?
To actually try and make their team Welsh? Well,
I think this could be it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think who was the main wicketkeeper for them last year? Because Tammy was there, but did she keep? I can't remember.
I don't think so.
My memory is a blur of last summer. But anyway.
And we'll write into his answers on a postcard, please.
On a postcard. But the thing that's interesting about when the retentions happen is also the drafts was, like, the draft list was released of players who were going to be... I still feel weird about the draft, but we're going to push that to the side. So players can either enter in a price band. So, for example, you've got the top one of 50,000. So you've got Smriti Mandana, Jemmy Rodrigues, and Deepti Sharma, and Ash Gardner. So as expected, a couple of the Indian players in the top bracket, which makes sense. If you're earning a lot in the WPL, you're not going to go to the 100 for way, way, way cheaper. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they are taking a bit of a pay cut. Same with Ash Gardner. Then you've got 40,000 with a couple of Aussies. 30,000, there are quite a lot of players in there. Again, a couple of Aussies. Deandra Dottin, who... I'll be honest, I don't think she's going to get a gig. Chamari Attapattu's in there, though. I am glad she is pricing herself in that bracket, because she should be in there. Lizelle Lee as well. Not free agent, that's the wrong word. She's kind of like, well, she's not contracted anywhere, so kind of does what she wants. Then you've got the 17,500. So Susie Bates actually is in there. I personally thought she'd be in higher, but I guess playing it safe, maybe. Yeah. Couple of Pakistan players, which is nice to see. So like Nida Dar, Fatima Sana. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, 14,000 and 11,000. So you've got all of Prendergast and Gabby Lewis in the 14,000, which yes. I would love to see them picked up.
Yeah.
And then there's a big list of no reserve prices where it's kind of like throw your hat into the ring and see what... Is that ring into the hat, hat into the ring? I don't
know. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, that is.
I don't know which way. I'm not good with idioms. but anyway, there are a lot of players on there. So you've got players you expect to. So for example, Maitland Brown, who got picked up last year, she's in there. But then you've got a lot of Aussie domestic players. You've got a lot of associate players. Amy Hunt is in there. Charlie Knott for Australia. Sunny Lees for South Africa. So there's a real range. So obviously a lot of people won't get picked up. Tons of English domestic players as well. But it's just a good opportunity to put your name in because you never know what coach might have spotted you.
Remind me what the rule is for overseas players. Is it you can have four? Can you have four?
No, it's three.
It's three.
Because do you remember when they did four? It was the year that it was, I think it was the three South Africans and Susie Bates, was it?
Yeah.
So it was Shabnam, Kapi, yes. And Donovan Neerkirk. And then Van Neerkirk didn't play. Yeah, you can only play three. We'll see what happens with that. I would imagine Smriti Mandana will get picked up. We said last week, potentially Birmingham Phoenix.
I mean, she's just doing amazingly in the WPL.
Yeah.
Top run scorer, most valuable player. I would imagine if she wants to come over, then there'll be people going for her, definitely.
Yeah, because also, as we've said with the 100 before, the reason it works so well in the women's is because you get the best players. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we don't get the best players over here, then the tournament, it loses a bit of quality. And yeah, people are no longer coming to see the best players in the world. They're coming to see B-listers. No offense to the men's competition. Calling you all B-listers.
I want to be B-listers.
That's it, Z-listers. I think it will be good. I can't remember when the draft is. 20th of March, is it?
That's right, yes.
20th of March, yeah. So I'm ready for the chaotic Sky production where last year I just have memories of that being absolute chaos. But we'll see how that goes. It has been a bad week for not actually Elise Perry. Elise Perry's had a great week. However, the sponsor's car, who was mounted on something near the boundary, is now smashed thanks to Elise Perry's half century for RCB when they beat the UP Warriors by 23 runs in the WPL.
Yes, I saw this clip. So she launches the ball for six and it goes straight through the driver's side window.
Yeah.
Car and smashes the window totally. I mean, if you're going to park a car there, there's a danger that's going to happen, isn't it?
Do you know, it is a little bit silly because how many times have you seen village cricket when someone will absolutely whack a six? It's always their car as well. They always destroy their own car. Not Elise Perry. She just sees a car, whacks it. Don't park there, mate. Not a good idea.
Yeah. But there's been some big hitting in the WPL. The boundary count's really high and, some giant sixes into the stands. I just loved watching Jimmy Rodriguez innings the other day. Absolutely magnificent. Great hitting. So stylish in everything that she does.
This is what I was going to say. I was like, I really hope she gets picked up in the 100 because just watching her bat, it's so fluid. And as you say, stylish, it's like she's kind of got her own little thing with it. And it's just, it's very nice to watch. I think about, was it 92 she got for the Superchargers a couple of years back?
Yes.
Which was the highest score until Tammy Beaumont went and did a thing for Welsh Fire last year. The way she kind of plays it with her wrists and stuff, it's beautiful to watch. Anyway, do you want to continue?
I had something really, really good to say and now I've totally lost it.
Oh, happens to me all the time.
Friend of the pod, Shika Pandey.
Yeah.
Has been picking up some wickets as well, bowling really well. That getting that ball swinging early doors. Loved watching that. I think she got Alyssa Healy out. Good old Shika Pandey.
Umpire review. We are going to discuss about grounds teams because we've had Meg Lay on the podcast, who we'll mention in a minute. But women working as part of grounds teams is relatively new, to be fair, to cricket and many other sports. And last weekend, when it was the Women's North London Derby, so that's Arsenal Women against Tottenham Hotspur Women, it was held at the Emirates Stadium in London, and they had a 13-strong all-female grounds team, which was, I believe, a first in women's football. Now, of course, last summer we had at Edgbaston the Ashes T20. It was an all-female team. It was mainly cricket, but there were, I think her name's Tara Stanford, who is a regular. She works for Arsenal doing their groundskeeping. She was part of that team, and it was really cool to see. I think there were 5 women in cricket working at Arsenal last weekend to prepare that pitch, and I just thought, one thing I do love about the women's game is that there is often quite a lot of crossover between other sports. And I think that is an area where it's really cool that there's crossover, because, I mean, preparing a football pitch, I imagine, is very different to preparing a cricket pitch and a wicket and things like that. Seeing the crossover and seeing people like Meg Lay, Kylie Lambert, who works at Worcester, Jasmine Nicholas, can't remember her name, I apologise, who's at Yorkshire, Emily Geach at, I think she's Glossman, no, maybe not Gloucestershire, Western Storm, can't remember which county, and I've missed someone, I think at Essex, so forgive me, but seeing cricket represented there I thought was really cool in such a big moment, because I think it did get a little bit more coverage than at the Ashes T20 did, but again, just both amazing things.
It's brilliant, isn't it? And it's one of those roles which is almost exclusively been done by men historically, and there's absolutely no reason why it should be at all. And I think Meg Lay's been brilliant in banging the drum for this, getting a lot of publicity around it, and then things like the Edgbaston Test match yesterday, it just gave a visibility to it, didn't it? Which is just absolutely amazing. And just giving those role models to girls and young women who want to go into groundskeeping as a profession is really, really good.
I think also the thing that's really good that Meg Lay's done is, very, very obviously, a lot of the stories in women's sport are about sexism and negative experiences, because that is the case. But Meg has always spoken about how her experience has been so positive. And for example, when she was at Gloucestershire, how all the men on the grounds team were lovely and didn't discriminate and that sort of thing. She's obviously now got the job at Lord's as well, which is fantastic. And so having those really positive stories is even more encouraging, because people want to go into a welcoming environment. So to see that all happening is amazing. I think Kylie Lambert, who's at Worcestershire, obviously has a very big job given it's Worcestershire. She's
underwater breathing apparatus to do her job.
Yeah, as well as snorkel. I think she might be around my age. I know she's is part of an apprenticeship. So it's really cool to kind of see that this isn't just exclusive to one person. Actually, a lot of people are starting to get into it. And Emily Geach, she plays for Western Storm. I think she, again, is around 18, 19, maybe even a little bit younger. But it's good to see, players. So I think she does stuff at her local club as well. So it made me really happy to see, because I do love cross-sport things like that.
Yeah, it was brilliant to see. Brilliant.
Shall we introduce our guest for this week?
Yes. Tell us about our guest for this week, Pauline.
Do you not know who I've picked?
I don't know who you've picked. How could I know? You didn't tell me.
I should have told you.
You've got 2 in the can and they're both brilliant.
Yes. So this week we have Molly Barber-Smith, who plays for Scotland Under-19, Sunrisers Academy, and I think Middlesex as well. We didn't actually speak about Middlesex. We spoke a lot about Scotland and Sunrisers. But it was so interesting to hear about Molly's story, because firstly, unconventional route into cricket. Secondly, has had some amazing highs with Scotland Under-19, but then has had a lot of lows with injury and is kind of still in that space. But big fan of the pod. I know her mum's a big fan of the pod, so shout out to Molly's mum. Not sure of her name, but shout out. So, it was great to chat to Molly, and enjoy our chat with Molly. So So firstly, what's your cricket story and how did you first get involved with cricket?
Well, it's actually quite a cool story. I mean, well, that sounds a bit bad, but so in year six, I went to school quite near the Grenfell Tower where the Big Five was, and our school held a charity cricket match, which was the like Commons All-Stars against some team. I'm not too sure, but they did a kids session beforehand, and I've always played hockey, so my PE teacher just went, oh, Ryan, you've got good hand-eye coordination, do you want to go along to this? And I went along, and then a mate's dad, who turned out he was a coach at the local cricket club, was like, oh, do you want to come and try it? And then I just went on from there. I mean, my junior club was brilliant. I was at Richmond. I had head of it was Chris Hay. He just like loved it, and yeah, that was amazing. And then I just I got selected for Middlesex, and I think my first or second summer playing cricket, and then it kind of just went from there. It was a bit of a whirlwind, but really, really good fun.
Wow, that's amazing. So in the course of what, about 5 years, you've gone from that to you know, to where you are now, which is absolutely amazing. What a journey. I mean, tell me a little bit about some of your role models in the game that you've inspired you.
Well, so when I first started playing cricket, all I really knew was men's cricket. So obviously, like, the usual, Ben Stokes, that sort of lot. But then when I first played for my women's club, and I still play for Gunnersbury, my first ever first team match, I opened the bowling with Naomi Tai, which was one of the biggest, coolest things in my life. So that she definitely was a massive influence on me. Her and Kat Dalton at my club, both great fast bowlers. Kat not anymore due to her injuries, but I mean, she's the first ever female head coach in the Pakistan Premier League. So I mean, that was incredible. And then the head of my club was Beth Morgan, still is Beth Morgan. So it's not like I'm short of people to look up to. And having had Ollie Pope at my school, quite cool. So that's definitely something. Yeah, all of them really. The list could go on, but
that's amazing. Those are some really good names. Friend of the pod as well, Kat Dalton. Really, really nice to hear her influence on you too.
Yeah, she's brilliant. She's brilliant.
Yeah, and I guess it's all happened quite quickly, your kind of journey into cricket, and then now you're part of the Scotland pathway. How did that come about, and why did you pick Scotland over perhaps England when you're living in England?
Basically, I have been in the Middlesex side for a few years, and Carrie Carswell was the head of it, was the head of the women's side, and she used to captain Scotland, so she knew that they were sort of looking for some new players to bring up. And basically, she was talking to my mum one day and went, oh, you sound pretty Scottish. And she was like, well, yeah, I'm from Scotland. She was like, oh, do you think Molly would be interested? And then it sort of just went from there. I had a call with Gordon Drummond, and then went up to training. But then, unfortunately, I've been to two trainings, and then I had a double stress fracture on my back. So I was then out for about 6 months with that. And then we had the summer of the World Cup qualifiers and my debut and everything. So that was... yeah, so it's a bit of a whirlwind getting there. But yeah, it sort of all just came out of nowhere and then been amazing. Like, yeah, really amazing.
So tell us a little bit about the Under-19 World Cup qualifiers and then the actual tournament itself.
Oh, if you get me started on this, I could go on for hours. But I mean, the qualifiers, first of all, it was just amazing. It was the first time I really spent away with the group. And we bonded. We all got really, really close with the coaches, with the physio, like everything. It was fantastic. We all really played into each other's strengths. I think that was one of the best series us as the 90s have had, because we all came together and we all worked with each other, and it was just fantastic. And it was really well run. It was actually run by another person who plays in the club, the head of ICC Europe. But no, it was fantastic. I mean, my parents came out and my aunt and uncle came out, which was so nice, and so many other people's parents came out. So it was a really, really nice feel, because for a lot of us, it was our debut international matches or tournaments or whatever. So no, it was amazing. But then the World Cup was slightly less amazing. well, it was fantastic, but in the our first official warm-up game against the USA, I went to catch and broke my finger, so was then pulled out of the rest of the tournament, which was quite a big blow. That was really tough, but my parents, my aunt and uncle, my other uncle and brother were all out there, so I was like, I'm not going home. But my team manager, Abby Aiken-Drummond, she fought so hard for me to still be able to be part of the squad and everything, and that was incredible. So I was still able to go to matches and go to training and see the squad, and it was just fantastic. I mean, obviously it wasn't the experience I'd hoped for, but it was still just an incredible thing to be able to watch my mates play out there and fulfill this like childhood dream. It was fantastic. It was really, really cool.
It was an amazing tournament. We loved watching it so much. It was absolutely brilliant. And I guess, you know, it was really nice that you got to stay out there and be a spectator, if you like, but also, you know, be part of that team. And I guess the silver lining, in a way, is that you're young enough to be able to play in the next Under-19 World Cup as well.
Yeah, that is a very positive thing. I need to work on getting my knee back so I can actually get to that, because that's in January, I think. So yeah, that again was a positive, which was what everyone was saying at the time, was obviously it's going to suck, but you know, you've got to look forward, and you know, you've got another one to work towards, which was, that was again really nice and quite helpful to sort of understand, you know, obviously this hasn't gone the way I wanted to, but I've still got another opportunity, which
and you mentioned about your knee. Tell us a little bit about what's happening with that at the moment.
Right, well, that's another whole story. So in June, I was at Sunrisers training, and I was feeling perfectly fine, everything was going great, and then one ball, I just collapsed, and everyone around me popped, and I felt the pop. I was like, that's not good. And then a couple of days later, I went and saw the Sunrisers sports doctor, and we had MRIs and stuff, and found out that I'd torn my meniscus, and then went in a couple of days later again, had surgery. Before going to surgery, the surgeon was like, okay, so you'll be walking in a couple of days, you'll be back on sport pretty soon, like 6 months-ish. The surgery took 3 times as long as it was meant to. He came out and said, you can't walk 6 weeks. I was like, okay. Actually only last week, I've then had a PRP injection into it, and I'm having another one in a week to try and help the healing. It's been a bit of a roller coaster. It's been a lot of setbacks. It's been longer than I was hoping for. I've missed out on quite a lot, but again, there's nothing I can do about it except just smash my rehab, which is what I'm hopefully trying to do. And I've just had the most amazing support from my friends and family, and also Sunrisers. I mean, my physio is like, I don't even have the words to explain how amazing he is. And Luke is just, they're so supportive. It's been incredible, the support I've got. It's been really, really helpful. I don't think I've got this far with my injury if it hadn't been for them.
That sounds really tough. It sounds really, really tough. I mean, is it helpful to talk about timelines and stuff like that, or is it too early to say that at the moment?
I mean, originally we were hoping I'd be fully back by sort of end of January. Obviously we had this setback again with my knee sort of flaring up. So I mean, hopefully I'll get some cricket this summer, is my aim. We've got the World Cup qualifiers in the summer at some point, and then we've got the school games and obviously all my Sunrisers stuff. So the aim is definitely to get back this season, but my physio, my S&C, they know my knee better than I do, and I have so much faith in them. Like, I literally will do whatever they say, and so far they've been right. So I'm going to keep going down that track.
And on a more positive note, let's chat a bit about Sunrisers and your experience there in the academy so far, and getting to train alongside some amazing players, because you mentioned about role models before, but I mean, training in that environment must really kind of motivate you to, you know, potentially one day become a professional cricketer.
Yeah, I mean, my first ever trial Sunrisers, I was batting against Maddie Villiers in the net, and that was just like, I went there and I was like, oh, okay, this is the big deal. I mean, that was for the EPP. She was just helping with the coaching, but I was like, oh, okay, this is actually like a big thing. It's not just some cricket. And so I was in the EPP for 2 years because Sunrise had the first EPP a year before everyone else did, which was amazing. I think that massively helped my cricket. That just skyrocketing. But then last year was my first year in the academy. And I mean, I was quite nervous because a lot of them had been in the academy for a few years, but they're just the most supportive, caring, loving group of girls. And the coaches are all amazing. And the seniors as well. I feel like at this point, I train with seniors, even though I don't. I just somehow know them all really well. And obviously, because Abtaha, I know her quite well through Scotland. I always see her at training. So it's really nice. They're really, really nice group of girls. And it's really cool to be able to have the opportunity to train with them and sort of see where I could be in a few years, possibly.
That does sound amazing. I just think being part of a cricket team, it is about sport, but it's about friendship as well, isn't it? And just those relationships that you build and those good times that you have.
Yeah, I mean, some of my best, like closest friends I've ever made through cricket. So, yeah.
And alongside all of this, you're also balancing school. How on earth does that work? Particularly with, I mean, I think about the T20 World Cup last year, the under-19s, where were you doing your GCSEs last year? Like, how on earth did you do all that?
So I missed my GCSE mocks, actually, because that and that. The people in my year were not very happy about that. They were very annoyed when I was posting photos of me tanned on a beach or next to a pool, and they were all sitting in exam halls. But no, I mean, my school's been amazing about it. They're really, really supportive. And because it's a school where there are so many aspiring elite athletes and so many junior internationals, they know how important it is for us. They do everything they can to make it work. And I mean, my housemistress as well, she's just like, anything I need, she will sit down with me. And if I need to miss this day for this training, then she'll make sure that I've got other days sorted out where I can catch up the work. And yeah, no, it's fantastic. It was definitely something that going into it, we were a bit worried about, because missing 4 weeks of mocks is not ideal right for GCSEs. But no, the school managed it amazingly. And then I ended up with a pretty decent set of results, which I was really happy with. So yeah, it's tough, but they did it really well.
I can imagine your mates were really jealous of you as you missed all the mocks and didn't actually play any cricket because you had a sore finger. I mean, what?
Exactly. I still get some chat from that in my boarding house. Whenever anything to do with cricket comes up, they go, oh, do you remember when you skipped a month of school just to go and watch cricket because you had a sore finger? I was like, right, okay.
So what are you studying now? Are you doing A-levels now?
Yeah, so I'm doing business, PE and psychology, and I'm doing an EPQ on the side, which I'm absolutely loving.
Yes, I'm a big advocate for EPQ. I absolutely loved it. It was like my favourite part of A-levels, so I always tell people to do it.
Yeah, it's such a fun. I really enjoy it.
What's your topic?
Why do female athletes get more injuries than men when participating in the same activities? So it's all to do with sort of the ACL epidemic and cycles and all of it. There's so more to it than I'd ever thought when I started out. It's been really interesting to sort of learn about all that.
That was on the news today, wasn't it? There was something on the news today about it, I think. Some sort of report come out about equality. I think it might have been a parliamentary thing even.
Yeah, it was a parliamentary thing. But yeah, about lack of gender equality and research to do with injuries. So yeah, it's a hot topic and yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
And I guess also you can be testament to some of those injuries as well. So
yes, exactly. You can just
case study.
Yeah,
pretty much. Your own case study. Yeah.
So to finish off, what are kind of your ambitions for the future? Where do you want to be? What do you want to do?
That's always a tricky one. I mean, in the short term, I just want to be back playing cricket. That's all I've been thinking about for the last 9 months now. And I know I'm going to get there, but it's just going to take time. And I just need to be patient with that. But in the long run, I want to carry on doing it because I love it. And my dream is to have a long international or professional career. But I just want to enjoy it. And if I can make that my profession, then that would just be incredible. Really.
Well, it's an amazing situation to be in, isn't it? And you know, you in 5 years going from 5-6 years going from, you know, just turning up as a hockey player to play in a little knock around, and now under 19 international, on the verge of professionalism. It's just absolutely amazing. And watching your career with great interest.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
I really enjoyed that, shall we, Molly?
Yeah, it was really good. We had a couple of Wi-Fi issues, but no, it was a really good chat. And hopefully she will get back to playing. And that, do you know what? Her EPQ sounds very, very interesting. As I mentioned, I love EPQ and I will bang the drum for it all day, every day. So I love when people do topics I'm interested in.
Yeah, and she's had a real tough time, I think. And she seems really positive in the middle of it. So I'm really impressed by her.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we will be back next week with an Irish guest. I will be in the new gaff. I've got a German friend and I taught her the word gaff and she can't stop saying it now, which is incredible. I had to explain a lot of... I mean, I don't really use Brummie slang, but apparently gaff is a bit Brummie. Like, I don't know. I thought it was East London or something. I don't know. But anyway, being the new gaff. In the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram, which is Naughty Child Podcast. Our TikTok is also Naughty Child Podcast, and our Twitter is @Child Podcast.